Hello, hello, and welcome back or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and I'm jacked for today's episode. Today's episode is part three of a three-part series with Jared Blank. If you have not listened to part one and part two, I'll give you the quick Reader's Digest version. Jared Blank has just completed the World Marathon Challenge. That is seven marathons on seven continents in 7 days. Yes, that's crazy. It sounds insane. And it is. Now, in part one, we detail why he even chose to run this race. Well, the why, well, it'll motivate probably anyone. When Jared was a child, he was told he would never graduate high school. Jared was dealing with a learning challenge known as dyslexia. A lot of people didn't necessarily know that when Jared was a child. Well, if you know Jared, or if you can imagine where I'm going with this because of the theme of this podcast, Jared not only graduated high school, but he went to the University of Southern California, graduated with an undergraduate degree, and then got a master's from USC, and then got a MBA from Seattle University. Not surprised. Now, along the way, Jared Blank and I met at USC. We were both on the football staff under Pete Carroll. Well, Jared's career in football continued on. He eventually moved to the University of Washington, where he was named the Director of Football Operations, then moved back to USC for the same position. Basically, the premier position in major college football if you are in administration. Jared had it, meaning if you want to be in the front office in the NFL or an athletic director, this is the path you go on. Well, Jared started to listen to his voice and his story, and this podcast is all about people who are seeking to become the best versions of themselves. Well, he started to find his truth. So he quit his job at USC, the job that many people dream of having, to chase his next dream. His dream was to run the World Marathon Challenge. So he quits and begins this amazing journey of training and diving into it. But he doesn't just run for the sake of running. Of course, Jared is an avid runner, as you might imagine, but he runs to inspire. He runs to remind other children who are dealing with the learning challenge of dyslexia that you are not alone. And his goal is to run and bring awareness to dyslexia until everyone can read. Pretty inspiring, pretty powerful. Our second podcast conversation was literally the night before he left for this journey. He flew to South Africa, and then race one was in Antarctica, and away he went. This is right after he completes the World Marathon Challenge, and you can imagine his body was a little sore, but his mind was extremely sharp as we dove into the journey. Now, for somebody who's known Jared for over 13 years now, to me, when I look big picture at this incredible story of Jared seeking to become the best version of himself, as I see a guy who was fighting his truth, then he started to accept his truth, then he shared his truth, and then he lived his truth, and he did that in 6 months. To me, that's crazy impressive, and the courage is phenomenal, and the vulnerability is something we can all learn from, and that's what we talk about in this conversation. Of course, he'll take us into detail, and you'll feel like you're running the WMC with Jared Blank, and you'll feel the excitement and the chill in Antarctica. You'll feel the pain when he's in Australia and Lisbon, Portugal. And you'll feel the euphoria when he drops into Miami in the final leg and his entire family is there. You also get the chills. I mean, I even got emotional when he was talking about it, that for every race, a different member of his family wrote him a letter. But he was instructed when he was allowed to read it. And he takes you through that story of what those letters were about and the detail that goes into the emotion from his family, how proud they are, how excited they were. And for Jared, how he grew, how his relationship with running grew, and how, of course, he dealt with not only the elements of the actual race, but also after it. Imagine committing so much to something, then it ended. We dove into the final quarter mile and what he felt and what he sensed when he went through that. And I think something that we'll all relate to is that we've all traveled or chased goals and achieved them, I'm sure, at some point in our life. And at first, it's about achieving that goal. What we realize is that it's really about the journey to get there. As cliche as that might sound, there's some truth to it. You know, as an explorer and as a traveler, it's not necessarily about the destination and seeing the thing that we dream of seeing. It's about what we learn about our voice throughout it. Look, you know how I feel. I believe we all have a story. We all should share it, whether we share it through running, whether we share it in our own journal, whether we share it on status updates on social media, we share it as a motivational speaker, or we just share it with our intimate family and friends and partners, we have one. I think this world, it can get really complex, but it comes down to storytelling as an art. We're all living one, and I think we all have earned the opportunity to share it in whatever way that we want to. Jared Blank shares his story with his legs through running, and he's inspiring countless people across the globe, because as Jared would say, you are not alone, and he will run and raise awareness for something that matters to him until everyone can read. Curious as you listen to this, what is the one thing that you are quote-unquote running for instead of running from? I'm going to get out of the way. This is part three of a three-part series with Jared Blank and how he completed the World Marathon Challenge. Hope you enjoy.
Jared, you are a friend of the program and one of my closest friends in life. Welcome back to the Life Without Limits podcast. Fresh legs, I presume.
Yes, thanks so much for having me back. Love this podcast. Love what you're doing. And definitely thankful to be on the show.
Okay, cool. So last time we left off, for those of you that are just new to this podcast, we appreciate you jumping on. But if you've been listening, you've heard Jared on twice already. Once was telling his story about quitting his job and focusing on running the World Marathon Challenge, which is 7 marathons, 7 days, 7 continents. And then we talked to him literally the night before he took off for his first race. And now it's post-race. So, Jared, I wanted to really drop into like 3 topics for you today. Number one, I want you to really share with us what it's like to get down to the first destination, which was South Africa, and then fly over to Antarctica and kind of guide us through the race that you have just accomplished.
Definitely. So I traveled from Portland, Oregon to South Africa, and we talked the night before. And that next day I left, flew to Seattle and caught a 15-hour flight from Seattle to Dubai. And when I got to Dubai, it was really cool because there's a hotel in the airport there. So went through a quick security check and then had a 15-hour layover. So I was able to get a workout in at the gym at the hotel in the Dubai airport to kind of break up the long flights. And then the next day flew from Dubai to South Africa. And that's where we met as a group. So all 50 competitors met in Cape Town, South Africa. And then from there.
When you meet? You know, like, is it the feeling like training camp in football where you're like, all right, we're about to go attack something?
It does have a similar effect. There's that nervous, excited energy that you can feel kind of on that, you know, that report date. You're not yet, you know, working out, but so it's kind of like that long there's that long that long nervous energy to like, let's just get going. Like you're kind of ready to start and you get called up in front of everyone to get your race packet and your bib. And so then it's becoming more real. It's kind of like that's getting your gear, you're getting that, you know, your workout gear, you're getting your warm ups, you're getting, you know, you've done all the work to get your pads and, you know, the next day, you're getting ready to go attack this thing. So it does definitely have those similar feelings.
Okay. So I just think it's fascinating. I have so many questions and I'm trying to not interrupt you. But when I do, it's just because something is just needs to be asked. Take us on that first flight and that first race, because I was blown away with the, what would you call it? The course of the first of 7 marathons in Antarctica.
So the night before that flight out there, I definitely had trouble sleeping. I think I like slept a few hours, and so I'd get up, I'd stretch, I'd, you know, message the tribe because they're all up and then you're on the bus and you're headed to the airport and now you're on the plane on an, I think it was an 8 or 10 hour flight from South Africa to Antarctica. And we touched down in Antarctica and you're picked up by snowmobiles and like, you throw your bags on the back of the snowmobile and you climb in and they take you to these bunkers and you have 2 hours to change and get ready for the race and then head out to the course. And the course itself is a looped course. I believe we ran 5 or 6 laps around this course. And it's -5 degrees Celsius. So I think it's like 20 degrees Fahrenheit. But you would have a wind chill on half of the course. So half of the course had this like decline. But there was a headwind into the decline, and it was really cold on that side of the course. And then when you make the turn, you have an incline, and you're in the sun. So it's hot on that side. So there was like half the laps I was like unzipping my jacket, taking off my gloves, and then the next half of the loop I was putting everything back on, zipping up, and getting ready for that. But I have to say it was one of the coolest places that I've been fortunate enough to run in. Just you're crunching on snow and you kind of see these mountain peaks in the distance. I mean, it's just such an epic place to be in Antarctica and running a marathon. And then I don't know if you've ever played the game Mario Kart, but you see those like ice blue patches when you're ever in the races where you're in the snow, and they had those like in Antarctica. So you were like kind of avoiding stepping on those, 'cause every time you did, your foot would kind of slip out. And
within that, 'cause we'll have pictures on the blog that you can check out at yogiroth.com. We'll put them on Facebook, or all of Jared's social media platforms are awesome. Check it out at InMotional. Jared, what was amazing to me when I saw Antarctica was that, like, there's nothing there. You know, it felt like you dropped this private plane in with every runner, 55 of you, I believe. And as you referenced, you went and did your laps. What are you thinking about on the first one with all the hype? And here you are at a place where, I've known you for a long time. We've talked about pretty much everything, but we've never really talked about going to Antarctica, right? So you're in a place that maybe you never even thought you would go to prior to learning about the World Marathon Challenge. I'm just curious, like, are you listening to a podcast? Or are you just kind of thinking and taking everything in? Are you feeling crazy fresh? Are you thinking about the 6 other races? Are you literally being where your feet are? Like, what's your mind like as you're going through race number one?
I'm really trying to be where my feet are. And just in tune to running. And I am like really stoked to be in that environment. Like, I've only read about the running in Antarctica from books, and Bart Yasso is this great runner, and he's talked about it in his books. And so I've read it. And I remember actually sitting on your couch and we'd see the map of the world, and I would look at Antarctica and be like, oh, that'd be so cool. So to actually be there was almost surreal. So I was really just trying to take it all in. And when I run, I get into this deep zone. I mean, it's one of my favorite things about it. And it's almost like nothing else exists. So I had to, it was kind of this like moment of give and take to you're in Antarctica running. And now I'm going into like my deep focus on just the movement of my feet and focusing on my breath and getting into the zone of running. So there was a lot of things I think at pulling at me during that experience.
Wow. Okay, so race one ends. You finish strong. You feel good. What happens? You hop on a plane and like take. I think people are going to be really curious. Like, is it like an ice bath? Like how do you get your legs back to literally land? And then what's the process like when you land? Like, you land and get a latte and then run, or do you like land, run, get on the plane? Like, how does it work as you get to stop number two?
Yeah, so definitely. So we finish the race and we have a few hours before we take off back to South Africa. So bunker and kind of change up there, and they don't really have showers for us in Antarctica, and that was the only reason we didn't have showers for. But once we get on the plane, kind of just tried to stretch out. I was on the ground. I think I slept underneath one of the coffee tables. They had a coffee table in the airplane, and I think I slept under it that night just to, like, stretch out my legs and try to recover the best I could. And then when we land in South Africa, we have a few hours before that race. So kind of doing some stretching, foam rolling, getting the body back as best I can. But we're going into a race where it's 75 degrees Fahrenheit. So we're definitely going from one extreme to the other. So that was something that was in my mind, just that's going to be, you know, that's going to have an effect on the body. But when you get out to the course, you're running around this amazing place in South Africa. You're seeing the water, you're on the boardwalk. So it was pretty exciting. And the president of the International Dyslexia Association, Oregon branch, Jane Cooper, was actually out there with her family. She's from South Africa, so she was there for the race. And that was kind of meaningful, just to see somebody you know, and they're out there supporting me as well as the other runners and cheering everyone on. So that was really cool as we got into that race in South Africa.
Wow. Okay. So how do you feel? Like, you've trained for this. We talked about it, where you've done two races in a row. You've done long runs. You did everything you could to prepare yourself. When you finish the second of seven marathons, what's your mind like? Where's your confidence at? What's your body like?
I'm excited. I mean, I'm a little sore from I was more sore from the race in Antarctica than I was hoping for, but I'm excited. Like, I'm out there running. It's a hot day, but it's still, you're in an amazing spot in South Africa and Cape Town. And I'm motivated to do this thing and just kind of go out and stride and just try to find my pace, my rhythm. I'm not trying to crush it, but just trying to find that smooth pace that we worked on in training, and kind of build that consistency. And we ran in the first loop, we hit the flagger on, there's people that are marking the course with flags, and he didn't tell us to turn around. So we end up going past the flagger, and we realize, like, this doesn't seem right a half a mile down the road. So we turn around and we go back and we go, "Are you the turnaround guy?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." Like, so I was with like four people, and we told them, you need to tell people to turn around. So we were able to save a lot of the field, which is nice. You want to protect the other runners, even when you maybe go a little farther yourself. So that was something we had to deal with. But when that happens, you know, an extra mile in a race like that can feel like a long time, but you don't want to let that be a distraction for the rest of your race. So I had to really just let it go and figured it was part of the challenge, and did the best I could with that in that race.
Wow, that's amazing.
And something.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, go. No, you're good.
I was just gonna say, like, you're in the midst of running seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents, and the turnaround guy isn't doing his job. You easily could have freaked on him, but you seemed like you just stayed connected to, you know, as you said, finding your pace and your rhythm and trusting your training. I mean, think about how pissed or frustrated we get when somebody cuts us off in traffic, or we're 2 seconds late, or, you know, somebody didn't respond to that email. Like, what a great example of just, you know, flowing and nothing you can really do about it other than hopefully prevent it from ever happening again.
Right. And, you know, I was fortunate. I worked with Yassine out here in Portland, and he runs the Weiss Wolves. And part of our training was talking about that level of patience, you know, whether it is a long line or whether, you know, it's an extra loop or getting lost on the course. These things happen. And yeah, they can, you could easily become frustrated. You could easily become annoyed or hold on to it. But then how does that help you? Mm-hmm. Is kind of the thought process in my mind. What would, so I didn't want to let that be a distraction. I think, you know, your audience in calling football games, it's kind of like you get a false start penalty or you're backed up and you can be mad about it and you can lose your stuff about it. But then that time isn't spent looking at the call sheet. What do I have to dial up here? What play can I call that's going to like open the gate and get us 20 yards down the field? And so I think it's kind of that mentality, and that's, it's hard, and it's a hard place to be. But that's where I'm working to put my energy at that point.
Okay. So you knock out Cape Town, South Africa, and you're going to take a short little flight to Perth, Australia.
Yeah.
How you feeling? Are you like, okay, I'm good. Like two down, five to go. I'm assuming, you know, we kind of talked about the middle being, you know, the part that you wanted to get through. What was it like in Perth? Because I'm also imagining the temperatures. Every place isn't -5 degrees Celsius as it was in Nova Antarctica. What was it like as you dropped into Oz?
Yeah, so it was really cool. Oz was, we were running at night in Oz, and it was kind of that, it felt like that, I don't know the exact temperature it was, but it felt like 60 and warm, you know, like you could walk out with t-shirts and shorts and feel comfortable, which is a great environment for running, like not too hot, not too cold. You're not wasting any energy trying to heat up your body or cool it down. And I was jacked. I had a buddy out there, Nate, who had, he's in Adelaide, but he flew, him and his friend flew to Perth just to see me off on that race, and so that was cool. Another moment where you're just connecting with somebody, and I was in a good headspace. I mean, look, we just battled cold. I battled heat. Not perfect race in South Africa, but got through it, and then was feeling good, and I was actually running at a really good clip in Perth, Australia, until about mile 22. And at that point I heard something in my leg and it had completely felt like it locked up on me to where I was straight legged. And it was a real moment of devastation and disappointment right away. Cause I knew I was in trouble.
What does it sound like?
It was this like kind of like it was like a clicking noise, kind of, I guess, to best describe it. And then when I tried to bend my knee at that point, it just felt like something was like crunching.
Wow.
And
okay. What do you do? Like, you said that was mile 22.
Yeah, I was about 22 miles into the race.
Okay, so what do you stop and assess it? I mean, you know what's in front of you, or do you just keep running and be like, all right, I'll just figure it out in another 3 miles or so?
Well, so my leg feels like it's completely stiff, and I power through the aid station, and I get past it. I think I grab a Powerade and a water, or whatever electrolyte they had in the water, and I get that down, and then I just remember going past the turn there, and then I was on the ground just trying to get my knee to respond, seeing if it was just something that like cramped up in my leg or what it was. I'm literally down in the ground in Australia, trying to get this thing to respond, and it's not. And one of the runners came up to me. He's like, just keep going. Just finish this race. Just think about getting to Dubai. That's all that matters. Don't worry about the time. Just, because he could see that I was frustrated and disappointed. And so for 4 miles, I was pretty much hobbling on this thing, trying to get through this race. And And I was sitting in the disappointment and frustration. I mean, I got through the race. I finished, I think, like 4 hours and 45 minutes, something to that extent. So not where I wanted to be, but got through it. And then half the night kind of just stayed in that moment of disappointment because I knew I needed to process it because I was about to face a new reality of where my body was at. And I got the chance to talk to my coach on the phone. I called Yassine and we talked about it. And he told me some stories of a similar, he's had a similar thing happen for him and he's in a 100-mile race. So he talked to me about ways to get through it. There's ways to plant your foot and change your foot strike and do things to keep going. So I knew it was possible. And he gave me some recovery techniques that we'd worked on throughout training. And so at that point, I kind of treated it like the 24-hour rule. I was like, okay, I know I need to like whatever. So 24-hour rule is, for those that don't know, after a game, good or bad, you get 24 hours to enjoy it, deal with it, feel whatever you want to feel, and then you got to move on because you got the next week to prepare. Well, I didn't have 24 hours, but I had the 4 hours, or I had the 4 miles that I had to finish the race, and I had half the night. And once that call took place, I knew I had to go forward. So I created a new norm for myself. I was like, this is where my body's at. It's where my body's at, and I'm going to do the best I can. So I went and grabbed a towel and put ice in it, wrapped my knee for 10 minutes, put hot water in the bath, jumped in the bath, and then did so cold soak, hot soak.
Where's the cold? Like, where is this, on the plane?
No, this is at the hotel in Perth, Australia.
Okay, so post race.
Post race, yep.
Got it.
So like a post race recovery, yep. So we have about 4 hours in the hotel once the race ends, and so I did that, did some light stretching, and then grabbed a meal and I think put my head down for a minute. And then we were back in the lobby going to the airport on our way to Dubai.
Wow. Okay. So you land in Dubai and you're about to start this race. And this is when I believe, you know, I'm just nerding out on every Instagram post that you have, but it seems like you're social because you did a beautiful job and it's still there. Jared's Instagram page is phenomenal, emotional. Please check it out. But you let us know about what happened on mile 22. You let us know that you had to run an extra, you know, couple miles in Cape Town. What was that like for you when all of a sudden, because I bet your following went up like, I don't know, 50% or something. It seemed like all of a sudden the globe was watching not only the World Marathon Challenge, but specifically a lot of your stuff. As you're preparing for race number 4, did that help at all? What was it like as a tribe kind of formulated around you?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think you feel that stuff. You know, I think you feel positivity, and it was a reminder, you know, that their family support, friend support, coaching support, like just tremendous amount of support. So I think that stuff all helps, you know, on such a really different level. And so getting ready for Dubai, I was like, I had this mindset, like, I'm going to do this. And if my leg locks up at 3 miles or if it locks up at 22 or what, I can power through this. And I ended up running 23 miles that night of really like solid running. I ended up buddying up with this person and we were just cruising, working together. And I think we were running like even, might've been close to, I mean, it was a good clip. I don't remember the exact time, but we were running a good clip. And then at 23, it seized up on me. And at that point I had a game plan for it. You know, I put my headphones in, I powered through it on my own. I sent the other runner on. I said, don't worry about it. It's been strong. And I was on my own at that point, and I finished those last 3 miles as strong as I could, hobbling on that one leg.
So again, at the end of a race, you got to hobble through it. Do you think that all of your treatments that you referenced from your coach got you to basically be able to run 22-ish miles healthy? And what do you like when it starts to hurt again? You know, do you go, oh, not again? Or do you tap back into a skirt and skill set? And if you do, I'd love if you could share that with us, because I bet a lot of people would want to know how you powered through that.
Yeah, so I think everything that we worked on from a recovery standpoint was critical. And I don't know exactly what it was, and that's why I think it's so critical to kind of throw everything at it. You know, hot soak, cold soak, light stretching, the two rehab sessions that I did on the airplane in between the flight from Australia to Dubai. So I think doing everything is always doing as much as you possibly can. In football, they do you see the coaches, well, the more you can do, right? Well, it's kind of the same with when you have an injury. The more you can do in working it, stretching it, treating it, massage, like everything matters. And I think everything counts. So I think that was really important. And then I guess the best way to describe it is when it happened in Australia, there was devastation and disappointment. When it happened in Dubai, I'd already created a new narrative in my head that my body and my mind accepted where we were at, and we were going to do the best we could given the situation. We're going to be as competitive as we possibly can given where we're at. And that mindset comes from not only training, but in the process of getting ready for this competition. I was doing yoga, and I worked with the people at Flex and Flow out here in Portland, and Jamie King's people are just amazing. And one of the things that you learn in yoga is like, you got to accept where your body's at and not get hung up in what it can't do. Like, don't let that distract you. Just accept where it's at and work within it. And that same concept came up when my leg locked up in Dubai. So once I knew that, then it was do everything you can given the situation and then let it go.
That's beautiful. Okay, so you knock out Dubai, and here we go. You are on the back stretch of this thing. The world's paying attention, and you go to Lisbon, Portugal. And I'm so curious about this one because, as you referenced, you know, you feel everything. I believe your brother was in Lisbon, Portugal. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. My brother made the trip out. My oldest brother, Josh, was there. So that was really cool. It was really special that he journeyed out there.
So what's that like? I mean, because you keep referencing these little subtleties, and if I'm listening, I'm probably like, what? Hold on. You run at night? Like, how does it work? Like, you fly in from Dubai to Lisbon, and it's not like you and your brother can go out and, like, explore the town, right? So what happens when you drop in? Are you running at night? Because it's not like it's a marathon like the New York Marathon or the L.A. Marathon where there's 20,000 people. And it's 55, and you guys basically make up your own course is what I'm kind of piecing together here. I'm curious, as you get to Lisbon, when your body is you know, struggling to a degree, and your brother, a guy that you've admired for a long time, and he clearly admires you, is in that community as well. But you have this fixed time frame around where you have to get your body right, your mind right, and then go attack the fifth of your seven marathons.
Yeah, so you're right. So, like, we don't have free time. We basically land, and then we have an hour and a half, maybe, from the time we land to get to the airport, or to get from the airport to the hotel, check into the room, put our stuff away, get our race clothes ready, and then we're back down in the lobby. So my brother actually met me at the hotel where we were staying. And so I'm really quick, grabbed my key, and in Lisbon, we ended up having our own rooms, and I was like on the fifth floor, and the elevator line was so long. My brother and I just take our bags and hike up the stairs. So the pre-workout before the marathon was a but to climb up five flights of stairs. And so we got a little bit of time, like I'm, you know, catching up with him and he's FaceTiming his wife. So I'm catching up with everyone as I'm kind of getting ready for this race and putting on my stuff. So there isn't a lot of time, but we're trying to maximize it and make the most of it. And I think that was really cool just to have him around and then for him to go out to the race to see us off and the start of it. And Lisbon, the course was really different because we were on cobblestone, wood, and then pavement, and it was raining, and I had my leg deal. So it was definitely going to be a challenge, and I think to have family support out there was really special.
I had to just imagine, I don't know if this is true, but is the fifth one the hardest one? And was it for you? And what was if there was one, what was the low point?
Well, I think in looking at the whole thing, Australia was definitely the hardest one for me. Lisbon, I was so mentally prepared for where my body was at and what the course was and all the things that were kind of stacked against me there, right? You had the leg, you had a cobblestone that was wet. So I knew I was in a challenging environment. So at that point, I just felt so ready for it. Like through our training, like there was times when I would do these trail runs that were, you know, multiple laps and hard and to the point where it would just knock you down. And so to be in that environment, I kind of had that mindset, and it ended up being one of the longest runs. I think, yeah, it was like the longest run that I had because I was doing the strategy of letting myself run when I could. And then as my knee thing started to come on, I would power walk through it. And almost like if you're an ultra runner, sometimes when you're in a course that's really hilly, you would run. And then when you get to those hills, you conserve energy by power walking. And so I was kind of using that strategy, dealing with the leg. And I got through 21 miles of pretty good pace, but the last 5 miles, I was literally dragging my leg the best I could. And it just 5 miles dragging is just going to take up so much time. But what was really cool was the last lap, and my brother saw me, and he ended up finishing it with me, which kept things positive and motivated. And then when we finished, we had a hour to kind of hang and then get ready to head to South America.
Wow. I just got the chills. What was he like in running gear? Was like prepared to run that last mile?
No,
or was he jeans and a hoodie?
He was like fully dressed. He had his bags. He had all his, like, he had a shoulder laptop bag. So like, and he was in dress shoes. Like he was not prepared to do a whatever 4 or 5 mile walk with me. But he ended up doing it. He was a trooper, and, you know, we finished it and then, you know, got a hang for a minute, and then it was on to South America.
Love it. Okay, so South America, here we go. Cartagena, Colombia, a magical city. What I love about this leg for you, and you shared parts of it, but I'd love you to dive in, is it looked like you fell down in this one. And it wasn't like a little scrape. Like you look at your Instagram page, and you took it looked like a hard fall, what you said at mile two. And of course you got back up, but it seemed like there's more to that. And if anybody who's been in athletics, I don't care what level, from Pop Warner to high school, to college, to the pros, like we always have this moment when we get knocked down and we're faced with the truth. And I wonder in this race, if that was that moment for you in the 6th of 7 marathon.
Well, let me take you back to how I was starting to think about this situation that I was in. if you look at, even before we got on the bus going to the airport to get ready to go to Columbia, I looked at my situation, I looked at all the races, and I said, this is kind of like an NBA series, best of seven, or hockey, you know, best of seven. And I'm really down. I felt down 2-3. I felt like I had two decent running, you know, two decent runs at the beginning of this thing with Antarctica and South Africa. And I'd been struggling, you know, 3, 4, 5. So those are my road games. So I took on the mindset that I'm going home. I'm down 2-3. And I want to make this a heck of a story. And I want to make this something really, really special. And I didn't know how I was going to do it with my leg, but that was my mindset. So even before we got on the bus, I just had that in my mind. Like, I'm going home and I'm going to make this something special. And so we're in Cartagena and we're running, and 2 miles in, I bit it. I'm down in the dirt. My arm is scraped up. I banged my head. Like, when I got up, I think I was going the wrong direction. At one point, I had to realize, like, kind of like reorient myself. And I was positive. It didn't affect me. I felt like, okay, this is just part of it. Another part of the challenge. And got my footing together and was going through the race as if it was just supposed to happen.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay, so when you're in Cartagena, I mean, it's magical. And it looked as though, was that another one at night? I'm just trying to piece together your image. What's it like running through Colombia in Cartagena in the evening? I mean, people might have watched like the two Escobars and they know a little bit about Colombia, or they watched Narcos and they know a little bit about Colombia. But here you are, like, I think there's a part of this that, of course, is the running and the journey, but there's also like the travel. Like, you've just dropped into six of the dopest cities, countries, continents on the planet. Are you able to take any of that in the 26.2 miles in each place?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I agree with you. It is a magical place. Like, you're running at night through the city, and it was special. It felt that way. And I really tried to do that with every place that I was in, just to take that moment. Even if you're only able to talk to the people in the airport for a second, but just to kind of embrace everything that went along with each place to the best ability, given the time constraint, and put energy into that process. But I really thought it was cool. Like, we started the race kind of right at sunset, and then it was dark, and you're just running through this place that does feel really special and magical. And then in that race, I linked up with a buddy who was running well, but, you know, just kind of knew he needed a partner, and partnered up with him, and was running. We were running at a pretty good clip, and I talked to Rob Scheidegger up at UW before this, and he was telling me some more tricks to do with that leg. So as we were going through water stops, there's pressure points on your hip that I could hit. That was painful, but it would release the pressure in my leg and allow me to keep the rotation going in my knee. And so I was, as we go through water stops, I was doing that and staying with my partner there. And we're, you know, pushing each other, and it was really cool. It was a really cool moment.
Okay. So you finish six and you're heading to Miami. You're heading to the U.S. You know, you've done 100 and whatever, 60 or 58, my math isn't great, of the 183 total miles. what is it like on the flight from Colombia to Miami? Because that might, I'm guessing, but that might have been the shortest flight out of all of them when you look at the distance that you went from country to country. What are you thinking? Because we go back to, you know, our relationship is 13 years long. I remember the day you left your job at SC. We talked about that when you get a standing ovation from the players led by Kerry Colbert, and you leave your job to chase this passion. Now here you are, 6 of 7 are completed, and you're flying over. Like, I just can't help but wonder, like, what are you thinking when you look out the window?
It's a great question. So my family did this really cool thing where I got 7 letters from them, and they were all they were sent with instructions to open before each race or after you complete one, however you want to do it. But it was one for each race. And I kind of figured out the order as I was going through, like, who was sending me each letter. And I knew the last letter, and like, even opening it, I felt emotion. Even before I opened it, I didn't even want to open it, 'cause it was just, yeah, it was so much. It was leaving my job. It was putting so much into training. And then here I am, we're on a 2.5 hour flight, which is the shortest one, to your point. And you got to get mentally ready to go run the last marathon. And I opened up the letter, and it was just a special moment. And I'm looking out the window, and I'm just putting it all together. And but my mentality, with all that emotion, with everything that was writing out, my mentality was I was going into Game 7 tied 3-3. I felt like I finished Colombia strong, and this was Game 7, and that's all that mattered.
Who was that letter from?
It was from my middle brother, Adam, and he had been a big, big part of this journey from the moment of, you know, leaving SC to being in San Francisco when I finished my 52.4 miler, to now knowing that him, as well as other members of my family, and remember, that was the first time I ever had like family at a race, was that San Francisco one. And then knowing that my brother Josh and Adam and my parents and my brother Adam's fiance were all going to be in Miami was definitely something that was really cool for me.
So you touched on Miami, and what we got to see a little bit of is you guys develop fans. Like, there's people waiting for you when you get off the plane, off the bus. You get back into the U.S., and I don't know the demo of all of the 55 runners, but I'm imagining wherever they're from, there's people in Miami, right? There's a big crowd there to watch you finish it off. If that's true, what was it like when you touched down and now here we are? Because Game 7, as you referenced, has way more hype than Game 3 or Game 4. And I'm curious what that's like pre-race for you as you're on the verge of completing this goal you've had for a few years.
Yeah, so there's more people in Miami than we've had at any of the other races. And you get off the bus, and it felt like you're like walking into a championship game just based on numbers alone. Like, it just had that feel to it. And I was on one of the last buses from the airport to the facility, because I was hanging back with the race director and a few of the other runners, so that we made sure everyone was through security, because you have to go through customs when you come back into the U.S. So we get there, and that's what it felt like. It just felt like a championship game. All the runners are there, and you can just tell it's a different moment for everybody. It's going to have a little bit more meaning. Game 7 is definitely going to have a little bit more meaning than Game 3, and that's exactly how it felt.
Okay, so take us through that race. I mean, are you plowing through it? Your times are pretty impressive, as we were following along online. a bunch of your friends and supporters back here in the U.S. Are you feeling like a crazy flow? Are you trying to run for time? Or is it like, all right, let's just finish this and enjoy this with the other 54 people that started this journey with me?
Well, you definitely want to enjoy it. But part of my whole thing with running is, again, trying to be as competitive as I can be within myself. And we take off and I'm running with this group that's, you know, I felt like we're running pretty strong and staying with this group. And we're going and I'm still battling that leg, but I'm staying with them and fighting through it. And I ran, so I think it was a like 5-lap course, and with like the last lap, or I think it was like 5 miles, the legs locked up on me again, or what feels like it's locked up on me again. And I remember you seeing talking about how you can really plant the foot and run off of it one legged. And I'd done this on my own, not realizing it, in 2010, when I ran my first marathon in Eugene. I blew out my hamstring, and was like stiff legged, and I was running on one leg. So I knew that I could do this, and my body was adapting over the course of these races. So planting the leg, I got really deep into the zone with 5 miles to go, and ended up finishing with this group. And I think we all finished tied for third in the race overall. And it was awesome because I just felt like I put everything I had into it.
What is it? You know, there's a great image on your social page of you crossing the finish line, but I'm curious about the last quarter mile. You know, what's that like for you as you're about to complete this insanely amazing feat?
You know, it's interesting because I remember really vividly, like, you're going hard for so long, and then you know that you only have a quarter mile left or half. I think I felt this at the half mile, like half mile left is like, what? We're going to the finish line to finish 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents. And I just remember having chills down the back of my spine, even though I was like sweating and it was humid in Miami. And it was just like the weirdest thing, because it's like from my waist up, I was like, and chills, and then from my waist down, my legs were just like, my leg was just so throbbing. Like, you gotta realize, like, when I was stepping, every time I stepped, I felt like I wanted to throw up because there would just be like pain going up through my chest with this leg. And this had been happening over, you know, 4 days or whatever it was. And so, but there was that, like, oh my gosh, this is it. And so I love running so much, and I love the process. And even when it's painful, I still actually really enjoy it. Like, I don't want that to be lost in this situation, even when it's painful. And there's so much enjoyment for me in doing it and battling, and for it to end was almost in a way really sad. Although, like, the accomplishment was going to be achieved, which is great, but the process was going to be over, and there was an element of sadness to that, going through that last quarter mile.
You got 7 letters from your family, one prior to every race that you opened. When you crossed the finish line, there was a few members of your family that were there in Miami. What's it like afterwards? Like, you know, you talk about Game 7, you know, we always see the champagne and clutch Jordan kissing and crying and clutching the trophy. Like, what was it like for you? You know, as you just referenced, wanting to almost vomit every time that you took a step, to then winning or completing it and then being around the people that love you and have supported you.
I don't know that there's words that I could use to really fully describe it. I felt very grateful and fortunate that they were there. And it was really meaningful. And it was cool to see how, like, excited and joy on their face as well. And to be a part of that, you know, like, I always say, like, you know, I had a really cool team around me in this process, be it family and others. And, you know, I got to play the role of athlete in the team and going out and performing. But they played as equal, if not greater roles. So to be able to see them was just so meaningful.
Wow. Okay, so... I mean, we talked briefly after the race late that night. What's that night like? And even the subsequent days, like, are you just sleeping? Like, what's your body's got to be in some sort of shock, I would imagine.
Well, it was cool. Yeah. Afterwards, after that race in Miami, I jumped in a hot soak just to kind of get my legs back and. Then got to hang with family that night, which was really cool, just to catch up with everyone and kind of hear about, oh, where were they during the race and what was going on. So I was kind of like learning the stories of their travel and their experience getting out to Miami and then being able to hang with them. And the next day I woke up and there was a gym right across from the hotel room that I was staying at. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. Like, I should go get a lift in. I have some time this morning, so I go and I lift. And then I was like, maybe that wasn't the best thing to do for your body, but anyway, I did it. And then I got that whole next day. We took that day just to hang around family, and I was probably pretty amped still from the experience. But there was also these moments where fatigue would just hit me out of the blue. So like I'd be fine 5 minutes and then 5 minutes later it was just like there was like just automatic fatigue. Like so it was kinda funny.
Were you taking the day. 10-hour naps or like 4-hour naps randomly?
No, I mean I think I laid my head down for maybe an hour that day. But as I got into the week, you know, as I got in towards the end of the weekend, I was definitely like, there was definitely 2-hour naps that were occurring just because I couldn't keep my eyes open.
You've got a great team around you. What do the people in the medical field say about what you accomplished? Because you've heard it. I mean, there's so many people that say like, well, marathons are bad for your body, right? Let alone 7 in 7 days on 7 continents. Travel, dehydration, blah, 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 blah. How do you recover from something like this? Because what you did is, I mean, I don't know of any other sporting accomplishment that's as grueling, I would imagine, as something like this in such a short period of time.
Well, I'm sure they're out there. you know, the cool thing about our sport is, to give you an example, I did a marathon on the treadmill as part of training for this event. And like 4 weeks later, I learned about somebody who ran 50 miles on a treadmill. And then like 4 weeks later after that, I heard about somebody that did 24 hours on a treadmill. So it's like it's kind of like a snowboarding tricks. Like everyone's just kind of keeps evolving it and taking it to like these really cool places, which I love about our sport. So they're out there, and hopefully I don't learn too much about them because I will just want to keep you going. But you know, it's no different than I think any other type of physical endeavor. There's like, you know, I worked with this really cool person out here in Portland, who's a sports performance chiropractor out at Evolve Fitness. Dr. Carl Beard. And so I saw him on the Friday after we ran our last race, and he kind of just checked everything out, you know, structurally with the leg, and just kind of did some maintenance stuff, and, you know, prescribed some workout, strength stuff to do. That's more like prehab and rehabilitative. So I was going, you know, checking the body to make sure that I was doing everything I could that was best for it, given the circumstances that I put it in. And then from a doctor's standpoint, you know, I got checked out before I went, and I can never tell you that the doctor said, oh yeah, go do this, and I'm clearing you to do it. But he said, at least you've thought about everything you could think about going into it and preparing to the best of your ability. So,
yeah. Okay, last couple before I let you go. I'm really curious about the following. You had such a build-up for this, right? You had a social digital media campaign. You had speaking gigs. You did press all over the world, TV, radio, print, etc. And then you accomplish it. Like, were you depressed at all afterwards? Like, what's that like? Because it's like such a high that you just referenced, and such a buildup, and so much at stake, and so much that you left, that when it ended, and now all of a sudden, maybe after the first week of being home, there aren't a million more interview requests. Maybe there isn't as much anticipation because the goal was accomplished. I'm curious how you dealt with that, if there was, or there were any moments of, oh, all right, it's over. Curious if you could talk about that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, I think, like I said before, there's like, I enjoy such the process of everything. And I enjoy doing it so much. I enjoy training. I enjoy training as much as I enjoy competing, and vice versa. And so, when the competition ends, there is an element of sadness for me, for sure. But in this project, and I think in how I will explore all endeavors that I do here on out, it was actually really just the beginning. And when I started training for this, I sat down and I wrote down my goals, and my goal for this wasn't just to complete the World Marathon Challenge, which, I mean, it was one of the goals, but it wasn't the only goal on the page. It was really to become an ultra runner and to really understand what that took and that mindset, and from not only the physical, the mental, the emotional, all of that. So then when you finish it, it is really just the beginning. It's understanding that a lot of stuff's going to go wrong and you got to push through it. Well, that happened. There's going to be a lot of great moments. That happened. And there's going to be everything in between, and that all occurred. And so it was really building a relationship is what this thing was. And the relationship doesn't end. It just continues to grow. So...
Is that the relationship with running?
I think it's the relationship with running for me. And I think it's the relationship of also like understanding, you know, the body and having a relationship with the mind and the body, more importantly than just the running. So that evolves, you know, over time. And so that's, I think it's, I mean, it's great to share the story. It's great to have channels to do that. And that was really positive because I believe in what Team Quest, which is Run Until Everyone Can Read, and the International Dyslexia Association are doing, because I've seen it firsthand, and I think they're really changing the culture around dyslexia and helping students and families and really working with teachers and educators. So I see that as the way to change the culture around education, which I firmly believe in. And so, you know, that was really my why. And so because that was so strong, I think that's why I was able to work through the challenge. But I think it's just really, it feels just really like the start of things, not not an end or not a, you know, not something where it feels like something was done and next, now what, but more like, this is what can be achieved and where can we take it from here?
That, my friend, is the definition of growth mindset. Last question for you. And again, I feel like we know each other, our good moments, our dark moments. We've been around each other's lives for a long time. And I wrote this down after you finished. Curious if you'd agree with it and then your thoughts on it. But to me, Jared Blank went from fighting his truth, which was accepting the learning challenge that you had, to accepting your truth, which was accepting that and dealing with that, to sharing your truth, which was telling people about it, to living your truth, which is your relationship with the mind, the body, and running. And to me, Jared, that's a gift. And the most miraculous part is I think you did all of that in 6 months. Curious if, how that lands on you, if or not you'd agree with it.
No, I think I totally agree with it. It sure feels that way anyway. No, I think that's beautifully written. It absolutely feels that way. And all within all within that 6 month time frame.
So what do you say to people? And this isn't, I don't want the, you can chase anything you want speech, but really, I mean, people deal with a lot of shit, right? From anxiety, depression, learning challenges, bullying, just not having confidence in their passion, their dream, whether it be running, acting, writing, teaching, you know, making a, creating a restaurant, a clothing line, I mean, whatever it is. And it's a struggle to go live that. You know, I would imagine that the majority of the population isn't living their truth as they see it. And I get that sometimes that truth has to alter based on your life circumstances, family, kids, payments, etc. But fundamentally, I think you can always do something around your truths and your passions. And you've found a way to do that. I'm curious what you'd say to people that are listening to this. Number one, of course, in awe and impressed with your accomplishment, but also of like, well, how do I accomplish my quote unquote world marathon challenge?
Yeah, no, that's the goal with like emotional is getting people to move in the direction that they want to, you know, to explore their passion, be it running, music, art, it doesn't really matter what there's something that everybody enjoys and or passionate about, or at least needs to find that is their passion. And so it doesn't have to be, you know, mine was leaving my job and going on this journey for 6 months. And it doesn't have to be that. I think it can be done a ton of different ways, but I think it's really just taking that first step and, you know, what is it and how can I start incorporating it into my life? Because yeah, there are circumstances, family, kids, mortgage payments. I get all that. I totally get all that. So you got to do it within your framework, but it can just be a small thing. You know, it can be, you know what? I'm waking up 30 minutes earlier and I'm going out the door and doing whatever I can in that 30 minutes, you know, running wise, or I'm getting up and I'm playing the piano, or, you know, there's ways to find those chunks and then see where it goes from there. And I think it's really just taking that first step.
So where does Jared Blank go from there? What's next? I mean, I'm so curious. I'm sure lots of people are.
So it's a great question, and part of me is going through that process right now as to kind of looking at what transpired over 6 months and figuring out, you know, because I'm not naive. I need to make an income. And so looking at how I can fit that into, you know, what career makes sense, and looking at those options right now. I want to keep running a part of my life, and I want to keep helping students and you know, really working to help the International Dyslexia Association. And I had a fundraising goal of reaching 50,000 for the International Dyslexia Association. And so finishing that goal out, you know, I've done work to put a dent in it, but I really want to finish that out for them. I, like I said, I believe in what they're doing. So accomplishing that fundraising goal. And like you said, you can learn more about my story on Inmotional as well as donating to that page on my website and seeing what they're doing. There's a link there. And so that'll be part of my journey. And then I have some things that I'm working on for the rest of the 2018 race schedule and putting that into play as we speak.
I love it. Well, we all can't wait to listen. These few conversations have been a blast. You just knocked out 183 miles in 168 hours in seven continents. That's insane, but I love it, Jared. As you said so eloquently, this is just the beginning, man. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of that journey on this podcast, man.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I also had one thing to share with you because I thought about you on my trip. I don't know if you remember when we were in Manhattan Beach, but you told me like, oh, you haven't had a Coke in so long. And we went and got bottled Coke as we were watching the ocean. And I had my first Coke in I don't know for how long in one of the races. One of the runners told me like, try having a Coke. Like, when it gets hot or you need a pickup, and they had them at the aid station. So had my first Coke in a long time. So I thought about you when I was out there.
That's awesome. Well, for all those at Coke listening, you should sponsor Jared Blank. That's amazing, man. Thanks for coming on, man. Lots of love.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Wow. What a fun conversation. I think back on the three conversations on the Life Without Limits podcast that Jared and I have had, and he's in a different mindset each time because it's a different stage, obviously, in his preparation for the World Marathon Challenge. But throughout it all, there is a red thread. And I think this is Jared, that he's always tried to make the world a better place. And if we recall, this podcast is all about people who are seeking to be the best version of themselves. And that's Jared. I mean, think about what he's done. He chased his own dream relentlessly by leaving a dream that he thought he had previously, which was to be the director of football operations in major college football. He was at the University of Southern California to chase his next dream, which was to run the World Marathon Challenge, to realizing along that preparation that the task and the accomplishment of that, of course it was epic, but it still wasn't enough. He had to do something purposeful. The best version of Jared is impacting others. And he does it by mastering his voice and sharing his story. And I think all of us can do that. I really think we all have a magical story, whether you have 9 Instagram followers or 9 million, or you are super popular in social media or in somebody's eyes or not in other people's eyes. I mean, we all have a story and we're all relatable. We just got to choose how we want to share it. Sometimes it's just with a journal that gets passed down in our family and somebody's going to read it in 2 years, 10 years, 30 years. Or maybe it's on YouTube or a podcast or social media or just talking to your neighbor. I think we all have something to share. And I think we think on our personal lives, whether it's the most intimate relationships we have, like our parents or our partners or our siblings, or the secondary ones like our coaches, our teammates, our coworkers, or people that we've never met, like inspirational speakers and thinkers and motivators. They all have an impact on us because they share story. And I think that is an underlying element for Jared, is that his story is getting sharper and sharper and sharper, and he's finding his voice. And through this process, I mean, dude's power. He's found it. He's gonna influence people across the globe. I cannot wait to watch it happen. And I urge you to follow Jared's path along the way at Inmotional on social media. You can check out his webpage. All the stuff are in the show notes. And, of course, support the International Dyslexia Foundation and Team Quest. As Jared likes to say, you are not alone. And he will run and work at this craft until everyone can read. What a powerful vision and mission that Jared Blank has. Hope you enjoyed it. You know how we do it. We always end the podcast the same way, that the only limits that we have in life are the ones we set ourselves. Peace.